Good afternoon. I'm Mark Allen with Gaper.io, and I'm here today with David Kang, the COO and co-founder of KeeperTax. Good afternoon, David.
Good afternoon. It's great. It's great to be here. Thanks for your time.
Oh, thank you for joining us today. So, can you share a brief background of yourself and your work experience?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I graduated from University of Chicago in 2014, and I worked as a derivatives trader for a number of years before founding KeeperTax. During that time, I worked with modeling data, with sort of very in the weeds, sort of financial modeling. And over time, what happened was my co-founder and I sort of was actually a high school friend. We're kicking off ideas, and he was in tech and I was in finance. And we realized that there was this opportunity for us to sort of match our skill sets. And we landed on KeeperTax after, as you probably know, the rise of remote work of the freelance economy gave rise to all of these independent contractors who have pretty complicated tax problems. Mm-hmm. And, it's sort of unfair for them to, solve their own, be their own accountant. That's not really what they sign up for. And so that's what KeeperTax is designed to do. We're a virtual bookkeeper for independent contractors.
Very cool. So what has been your experience with remote employment, both as an employee and an employer now?
Yeah, absolutely. So interestingly enough, we started out as a remote company. My co-founder was out in the Bay Area. I was actually out in Chicago. So for the first 6 months of the company, we were video call basis only. We chatted every evening on ideas and how we could grow sort of this MVP that we had built. After we got into Y Combinator, we were obviously full-time in the Bay Area as part of the program requirement. But since then, with the pandemic and everything, we've been remote again. And it's been a great experience on both ends of it. I think, communication is one of the key challenges. The need to write things down, to be clear about, who's doing what, and to be accountable for that. But I think the flexibility has been great. Our employees really enjoy it. We have four full-time employees at this point. Mm-hmm. And I think the shift has been great. We haven't seen much of a productivity drop, if at all. I don't know if it's here to stay for our company, but I can definitely see how the trend is moving that direction, worldwide, I guess. Yeah.
I think it's going to continue to move. It already was moving that direction. I think the coronavirus expedited it.
For sure. Yeah.
I mean, 5 years.
Yeah.
So, and speaking of which, what do you think is the future of remote employment, and what do you think could be done differently to make it more effective?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think, obviously remote, is here to stay, and it's gaining traction. As you and your audience probably knows, big companies like Twitter have now gone full remote. I think other big tech companies will follow suit. I think the technology is there, internet connectivity aside, I think, video conferencing has been very effective. Collaboration tools like Slack, like Google Docs have made pretty much everything we wanted to do in office possible. The biggest challenge left, in my opinion, is probably culture. Mm-hmm. We had obviously a lot of like in-person happy hours, team building. It sounds cheesy, but I think it's important. We were lucky that, all of our full-time employees were in one place and we were able to sort of build that culture before everyone dispersed remotely. But I can see that being a future where people sort of gather together intermittently to sort of get to know each other more personally, but then on a regular basis, maybe they're working remote.
And actually, I think what will happen is instead of, people going to major conferences and all that, people will be dispersed and there'll be more meetings at the corporate or at an offsite where, once a quarter or once every half year, people will get together just for that one-to-one touch.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So what is the story behind KeeperTax? What does your software do? Who is your target audience? All those things.
Yeah, absolutely. So, at the most basic level, KeeperTax is an automated bookkeeper for independent contractors. So whether you're an Uber driver, whether you're a freelance software developer online, if you're one of those folks, you know how the taxes can get very complicated. You're responsible for adding up all of your own P&L, for figuring out what's deductible. If you are in a higher income bracket, you might have a personal accountant that you actually go to. But most folks just do it themselves and end up leaving a ton of money on the table. So KeeperTax, you know, links up to your bank account. You actually get paired with a real human being in addition to our software. We track all of your deductions. You know, we keep all of that organized for you. And, you know, we save the average user about $1,200 a year. So,
oh, wow. That's...
Yeah, it's a real amount of money.
So it's a real ROI.
Yeah, it's basically a stimulus check every year for folks who are, you know, engaged with the service. In terms of the background story, so, you know, I alluded to this earlier, you know, my co-founder was in tech, I was in finance. The tech company my co-founder was at, his name is Paul, was a company that helped Uber drivers and Lyft drivers track their miles. And mm-hmm. that was primarily for taxes as well, right? So as yes. a driver, you can deduct a certain amount per mile. And as we looked into that problem, as we talked about it over Zoom, we realized that, you know, the problem of taxes goes beyond just rideshare drivers. It goes beyond just miles. And so that's where KeeperTax fits in. You know, we find things like your phone bill. We find things like meals, things that are easy to miss, especially when they seem like they're small amounts, but mm-hmm. they'll add up over time.
They do, so, yeah. And just out of curiosity, with the mileage stuff, do you do that automatically with GPS, or do they enter their miles?
Right now, they primarily enter their miles. The other thing we do is, so you have an option as a driver to either track your miles or to sort of sum up your actual car expenses, meaning like your gas, you know, your toll fees, all of that. Generally, that's too difficult, which is why the mileage system exists. But we're able to track all of the actual expenses pretty efficiently, and oftentimes you save more money with that approach. So most of our users opt for that.
Yeah, that would make sense. So how did you incorporate the idea of remote at your company? It sounded like you started remote, went to on-prem, mm-hmm. and now you're forced to be remote. But how did you make that transition from on-prem to remote?
Right. So we've always, I mean, as I mentioned earlier, we have remote contractors, folks who help out with either customer support, a couple of folks on the marketing side that are remote. So we've always had an element of remote culture. The main difference was that, you know, we felt like we wanted our engineers to be in-house so that they were closer to, you know, the product and to the context that my co-founder and I have on a daily basis. So I think that's been the most important thing. You know, within an office, you're able to establish very clear lines of communication. There are a lot of little things that you pick up on that you might miss mm-hmm. if you only check in with someone half an hour a day. So part of the transition has been, you know, we're very proactive about daily standups, about checking in. You know, we have a policy that, you know, before we kick off a new feature for development, we try to make sure there's a kickoff call so everyone's on the same page. And I think that's probably, you know, it was definitely an adjustment to be made, but I think it's probably good practice, even if you're not remote, you know, to sort of be deliberate about communication up front. And so that's been the main learning for us.
Interesting. So the current pandemic forced everyone in the Bay Area to go remote on March 16th. It was the date. Right. Did that cause any roadblocks or challenges that you didn't expect?
Well, I mean, obviously, you know, we were one of the last companies to sort of a lot of other companies were there, Google and so forth. They were already closing their offices in February, maybe early March. So we knew it was coming. And we knew that, you know, we already had plans in the works for what would happen remote. I think the main thing for us was like, if there were things that we wanted to discuss in person or we felt like that would be more productive, we got that out of the way before the quarantine started. So a lot of like higher, bigger picture strategy discussions, we kind of ironed out our roadmap. And so, you know, we were in a good place essentially when it went to effect. Yeah.
So it's business as usual. Is that a good way to say it?
It is mostly business as usual. Yeah. And I think in many ways it was helped us gain more sympathy for our users, right? I mean, a good chunk, probably 30% of our users are folks who were working from home the whole time. I mean, if you're a software developer, independent software developer, independent designer, a lot of those folks were working from home. So this has helped us understand sort of, you know, what they go through, their mentality, you know, what their work life is like.
It always makes it easier to develop software if you live the same life as your users, right?
Yeah, for sure.
That is for sure. Yeah. So there are companies like Gaper that help develop, build, and scale products. How important do you think this will be going forward for companies like yourself that need to hire the people with the right skills, and they need to hire them in a hurry.
Right. So I think it's hugely important. When we started out and it was just my co-founder and myself, we did actually have a few developers that we hired from a dev shop. I could see us also have hired from sort of a talent marketplace, so forth. I think it's huge. I think what it does is it levels the playing field. I think if you're, especially if you're a less technical founder, but you have a great idea, you have a ton of ambition, a ton of, being able to hire a developer to build your MVP to sort of validate your idea rather than going all out and spending a ton of your own time learning the code and so forth. I think that's hugely valuable for leveling the playing field, for getting early ideas off the ground. And then I think even for companies, you know, that at our stage, we have some in-house expertise. I think oftentimes there's an opportunity to outsource things that are outside our core competency. You know, our engineers don't specialize in everything cutting edge. There are other things in marketing and SEO and stuff that we're not as good at that other folks have actually stepped in and given us a hand. So I think what it really does is it makes it easier for smaller companies to definitely to scale and definitely to move more quickly. And that's going to be huge for startups going forward.
Yeah, especially since you don't have to do the hiring and the vetting and all that stuff. It really saves a lot of time. And then usually it's a project by project basis. So you don't have to say, okay, now what are we going to have this person do, right?
Yeah.
They've done a good job. They've turned it over properly to us. We're happy.
Exactly.
Now, what's our next project?
And that's exactly how we've worked with contractors in the past. It's on a project by project basis. And generally, the commitment is lowered and hiring a full-time employee that you feel like you need to invest multiple years in. Mm-hmm. Here you can just give them something that's, you know, maybe more challenging than your team can currently handle. They do a good job, you give them more projects, and it turns very quickly into an effective relationship.
Yes, absolutely. So, well, David, I want to thank you for your time today. This has been very informative. I have a pretty cool product. I might actually look into it myself since I'm an independent contractor.
That's right. Yeah.
I could see that helping me, that especially, you know, going forward every April certainly will help me.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. Anyone who's listening here, if you're a 1099 based employee, you should give us a try.
All right. Well, thanks and have a great day.
Yep. You too.
Bye.